Welcome to Now Appalachia, hosted by author and Appalachian resident Elliot Parker. This show profiles the authors and publishers that have connections to the Appalachian region and how those connections influence and impact their works. And now, Appalachia.
And hello, friends. We welcome you once again to another episode of Now Appalachia, heard here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And I'm your host, Elliot Parker. It's great to have you with us as we continue to profile some of the outstanding writers and publishers who have connections to and write about the Appalachian region. And I am so delighted today to welcome an outstanding Appalachian author with us here today who now has relocated and lives in Texas. But she's got a great new book that you need to check out. And if you're not in the middle of reading something or looking for your next read, you need to check it out. And our guest today is Amanda Ward, and we're going to be talking about her new novel, The Jet Setters. And it's a fantastic story that you're really, really going to enjoy. And Amanda joins us today as a resident of, current resident of Austin, Texas. She is a former visiting assistant professor of creative writing at my alma mater, Eastern Kentucky University. She is the author of several novels and a short story collection. And this book that we're talking about today is her latest novel, The Jet Setters, which is going to be something that if you're looking for something to read, you're really going to want to check this out. Amanda is a graduate of the creative writing program at the University of Montana, where she studied under a variety of different fiction writers, including Bill Kittredge, Deborah Ehrling, and Kevin Canty, where she received her MFA. She is the author of the collection of short stories, Love Stories in This Town. She's also the author of the novel Forgive Me, Sleep Toward Heaven, Close Your Eyes, and How to Be Lost. And her most recent novel prior to The Jet Setters was called The Same Sky. We're going to be talking to her about her writing career and her outstanding new novel, The Jet Setters. So, Amanda, welcome to Now Appalachia. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I am so glad to be here with you, Elliot.
I wanted to ask you first about your book, because I understand that the idea for this story came from a personal experience or a personal trip that you took where you actually went on a cruise and got to think about setting a story involving a cruise. Can you tell us a little bit about how all that came together?
Yes. Well, so as you know, my book, The Same Sky, dealt with some children coming into the United States, crossing the border. And I spent a year interviewing kids at shelters on the border, and it was hard. And I was so proud to write that book, but to be honest, I needed a little break and I wanted to write about something fun. And so originally I conceived of The Jet Setters as the story of a family that's sort of grown apart from each other, and they're forced together on a cruise ship, and then they learn to see each other again, really, maybe for the first time. But I did take my two boys on. My husband said he'd rather be shot than go on a cruise. So I took the boys on. Carnival Cruise Lines had built a ship in Italy, and they were giving me super cheap trips for the inaugural trips, kind of to make sure it all worked. So my kids and I got on in Athens, Greece, and we went all the way to Barcelona. And just like the fictional ship, the Splendido Marvoloso, there were all ship, and it really is a sort of mysterious world in the middle of the ocean. So it was fascinating.
And you write about something that really connects to Appalachian culture, and that is family and all the dynamics and the dysfunctions that exist between members of families, and the secrets that some family members know about that others don't know about that tend to kind of bubble up in the most unforeseen and inopportune times. And I know you spent some time teaching and living in Richmond, Kentucky, and teaching at the Low Residency MFA program, the Bluegrass Writers Studio at Eastern Kentucky University. Can you talk about your time in Appalachia and how that helped you both grow as a teacher, but also as a writer, those experiences and being in that culture for a while?
Absolutely. I mean, some of the subjects that my students were writing about were things I didn't know anything about, you know? I mean, I grew up in New York. My family's from Savannah, Georgia, from the South, but not the Appalachian South. And it was really, it's moving to me to see the different stories that go on inside homes where you've never been. And especially as a writer, it was incredible just to hear how my students were wrestling with various situations in their own lives, how beautiful their lives were in many ways, the authors that they loved, that was amazing to hear about. And I was really moved. It was an incredible group of students. Most of them have published now and are very successful teachers and writers. So I feel like it was kind of a magical time, honestly.
That's great. And the Jet Setters is a little bit of a departure for you too. In addition to it being kind of set mostly on a cruise ship, you mentioned some of your other novels. You really dealt with some really serious issues and serious themes, things like surrogacy, things like immigration, things like incarceration, death row. And this is a little bit of a departure, a little bit of a more lighthearted departure, although there are some serious undercurrents in your story, The Jet Setters. But I was just wondering, why did you maybe make the shift now to something a little more lighthearted? I don't want to use that word. That may not be the right word, but a little more lighter than some of those weightier issues from your previous books.
No, that is the right word. I mean, well, what happened was a good friend of mine, Andrew Sean Greer, a friend of mine from graduate school, wrote a comic novel called Less. I don't know. Have you read Less? I mean, and it's the best book I've read in so long. And it's using comedy to bring up some really important issues. You know, it's heartbreaking and it's hilarious. And it sort of inspired me to try to do something like that, to try to take on issues with a comedic slant. And in some ways it frees you up. I've always had a kind of dark comedy, I think, but in my real life, I guess I've been learning to be a little goofier, and I also was feeling a bit freer from needing to prove myself to my graduate school colleagues. You know, I think for many years I was sort of writing to impress my graduate school MFA workshop, even though I hadn't seen them, you know, in a very long time. And so it's been freeing to sort of move beyond that and say, I can write something comedic and I think it's just as important and I'm just as proud. I don't have to sort of prove my bona fides. And I loved it. I loved it, honestly. I'm working on a book that's a little darker and I'm finding myself not wanting to do it. So I don't know. Also, the world is pretty dark right now and it's nice to have an escape. And even Graham Greene, you know, said that some of his books were entertainment. And I really think there's a lot to be said for that.
Absolutely. And we've got a terrific matriarch in this story, Charlotte, who we get introduced to early in the story. And one of the things I love about her is you have several of the children that we meet, and it's kind of told in alternating perspectives. We get three or four different points of view from different characters kind of explaining what's going on. I love Reagan because her mother describes her as sort of overweight and thoughtful. We've got Lee, whose real name is Elizabeth Lear. We've got Cord. We've got so many of these great characters. But what I love about Charlotte is there's moments in the book where they're kind of talking negatively about Charlotte, and she's just a little obstinate in the fact that she doesn't really realize they're kind of poking fun at her and being critical of her. And she just kind of goes on with whatever it was she was thinking about or saying. And I love that dynamic. You know, it just says so much about the family and how that structure of the family works, and that, you know, they can kind of dig at their mother and she just is kind of, just lets it go on. Can you talk a little bit about that, about creating Charlotte? And those moments are some of the funniest, I think, in the whole book, where they're kind of digging at her and making backhanded, you know, negative comments towards her. And she just bebops along just with whatever it was she was thinking about. And I love that, how those family members.
I know, and she wins, you know, she wins. I think that it's so true that, especially in a family, you don't always communicate in a straightforward manner. You know, every conversation you have is weighted with past angers and past stories. And I think it's almost impossible for most of us to move beyond our childhood self. And so from their perspective, I mean, I find this with my own siblings. Now we've learned to speak more honestly to each other. But I'm seeing that it's disconnected. Let's see. Did we get connected again?
No, you're good. You're okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so I'll start over answering that question. I do think Charlotte is so hilarious, and I just wanted to explore how we don't always communicate in a straightforward manner, especially in a family. And I think sometimes you're saying every conversation you have with family members is often weighted with past angers or annoyances. And I just think it's so interesting how families communicate in this circuitous way.
And, you know, beneath sort of those lighthearted moments too, there are some dark kind of undertones that permeate your novel, The Jet Setters. And I wanted to ask you about one of those. And that really comes from Charlotte's husband, who we learn as the story unfolds that he was an alcoholic bully who kind of, you know, berated and was nasty towards his children at some points in their lives. But at other points in their lives, he just kind of ignored them and didn't have anything to do with them. Can you talk about the theme and what that does and what that means to those children? The fact that her husband, you know, we don't see him very often, but his legacy kind of permeates everything that goes on with this family, both past and present.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to explore how we get past childhood trauma, honestly. I mean, I think a lot of us have had trauma in our past, especially, I know a lot of people who have, I have. And I wanted to write a book about people who get past that, honestly. And I also wanted to be, I think as I've gotten older, I've learned to be empathetic toward people in my past that seemed like monsters to me at the time, but now I really forgive them and understand where they came from and how they didn't know another way to be. And so I was trying to present him, the father character, with some sort of empathy. But I think that the kids are really marked by their relationships with him, especially Cord, who's just hearing this voice in his head. His dad has been dead for, you know, decades, and he just hears this critical voice in his mind that really threatens to ruin his life. And it's the voice of a person who's dead, you know, and can't, but a lot of us have those experiences, and can you break free of that, I guess, is to me the largest question in the book. And can you break free on a cruise ship?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Amanda Ward is our guest here on this episode of Now Appalachia. We're talking to her about her latest novel, The Jet Setters. Amanda is also the author of several other novels, including The Same Sky, How to Be Lost, Close Your Eyes, Sleep Toward Heaven, Forgive Me, and also the short story collection, Love Stories in This Town. So Amanda, we'll come back to the book in just a second, but I wanted to ask you just a couple of questions about you as a writer and you in terms of your process and how you write. Who are some writers that influence you or inspire you or that you find yourself, you know, turning to a lot? I know you're a big fan of George Saunders. I know he is a huge influence of you, but who else are some writers that you really gain inspiration from?
Well, you know, it's funny, Elliot, at different points in my writing process, I'll turn to different writers. So since I knew I was trying to do a family novel and a comic novel, I went from Andy's book to The Nest by Cynthia Sweeney and The Vacationers by Emma Straub. I read a book called The Rocks, which is also set in the Mediterranean. So I sort of assigned myself, okay, if I'm going to set it in the Mediterranean, I'm going to read every book ever set there. And if I'm writing about families, I'm going to see how everyone else looked into a family story, et cetera. But then when I get to later stages in the book, I have to work on the sentences and try to make them as elegant and beautiful as I can. And what I did at that stage with this book was started reading Jesmyn Ward, who, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful sentence-level writers writing today. So there's Salvage the Bones, but she had a book called Men We Reaped. And though the subject matter was very different from what I was working on, I would read a page of some of Jesmyn's stuff and then go back to mine, just a few pages a day, to try to in some way emulate what she's doing. Because that's very hard for me, the description of flora and fauna and slowing down to really take the time to make the sentences poetic. So I was glad that I had discovered her. And I just read constantly. Right now I'm reading an incredible memoir by Sarah Broom called The Yellow House about her upbringing in New Orleans and her family story. And that's an incredible book. I am constantly inspired and finding new stuff to read.
And I know that we were talking before the interview today that this book was difficult for you. You had remarked a couple of times that this was a tough book to write. You kind of alluded to some of the process in terms of writing it and looking at Jasmine Ward as some influence there and some inspiration. And I, just listening to you talk about that, we forget sometimes as readers and writers that this is hard work and that this is time consuming and this is a very solitary endeavor. Can you talk to us about your process in putting the Jet Setters together and maybe where you stumbled along the way or where things maybe took a little bit longer than you thought they were going to?
Yes, absolutely. Well, so I conceived of this as this fun comic novel. It was going to be so easy. This is interesting. So when I first pitched it, Elliot, I thought it was going to be a little bit like The Nightingale in terms of I was going to have Charlotte's backstory be about half of the novel. So I really thought I was going to write those scenes in Paris when she was 16 years old, and that was going to be a large chunk of the book. So I sold the book sort of pitching that, and then I started writing, and I didn't want to write those scenes at all. I cannot do historical. Everything I wrote was flat, and I hated it. So then I thought, well, okay, I'm going to ditch that part of it. And luckily I have an incredible editor who said, okay, sure, set it all on the cruise. And there's a few past scenes. There's a few remnants of all this hard work still in the book. But anyway, so then I wrote this book and I thought, I also thought it would be easy because it's 10 days and I knew each city. And I just had to go through, you know, if we're in Rome, I'm going to go through each member of the family in Rome. And then in Marseille, I'm going to go through each, and it's going to be so easy. That was the plan. So I did that. I executed my plan, and I handed it in, and I went off to a writing residency to start something new. And my editor called and said she just really didn't like it. I mean, she was very kind, but said the characters weren't very deep and that there needed to be more sort of surprises in the plot, that it just felt like it wasn't very good. And I was dumbstruck because I thought it was very good. And I've done this for a long time. So I thought, well, gosh, to me, the characters seem amazing. So I was at this writing residency at Sewanee, actually. And I was holed up in this room by myself for 2 weeks. And I just didn't know what to do. I knew what was wrong, but I didn't know how to fix it. So I started emailing all my friends, Meg Wolitzer and Doug Dorst. And I just said, how do you make a character? Like, how do you make a good character? This is on my eighth book again, but I didn't know how to do it. And so they talked me through, everybody gave me pieces of advice, but a lot of the advice circled around being kind to them and not making fun of them and slowing down. And I am a very terse sentence level writer, so I used to just sort of jump along as the scene went nice and quickly, but I forced myself to slow down and say, you know, before Lee reacts to Cord, for example, Lee will think about what Cord was like as a kid and remember a scene from their childhood, and then she'll react and you understand where she's coming from. And this felt to me maudlin and dull, and I thought this is making it a million times worse. And I sent the first few pages to Andrew Greer, and I said, isn't this just a sorrowful mess? And he said, this is the best thing you've written. This, you need to keep, you have to know. He said, you're doing Elizabeth Strout, stick with it. And just those words, whether or not they were true, got me to go do this through the whole book. And then when I handed it in, my editor loved it. But wow, that was another year and a half. And you don't get paid till it's accepted. I mean, I got paid the advance, but then I thought, oh, I'm going to get paid this money for this year. And I didn't. So I didn't. It was hard because I have three kids. So childcare costs money. And it was a hard time. But and now it feels really nice to be able to tell everyone else, like, it's okay. I felt lost. I felt like I need to abandon this book. It's not going to work. And then I just didn't abandon it. And now it's done.
Yeah.
And it feels good.
And I'm so glad you didn't, because the final product is certainly wonderful. It's a wonderful, wonderful novel. And I mean, something else that you have done, I know, a lot in your career, in addition to teaching at Eastern Kentucky University and doing a lot of other things, is you host a lot of workshops and do kind of a lot of workshops from your new home in Austin, Texas. And I know one of those workshops that's been very successful for you and for writers is one called How to Write a Novel in a Year. And I know you've done that several times. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what that workshop's about? And are you going to offer it again? And if anybody in our audience is interested, how could they get signed up for it?
Yes, and I love teaching that class. That's the only class I really teach. Sometimes I'll do a one day here and there, but for the most part, that's the only teaching I do now. And it was born out of a few semesters, you know, doing visiting semesters like the one I did at EKU and having these incredible students who wanted to write novels, because it's very hard to sell a short story collection. And if you want to make money as a writer to live on, you really need a novel. And I was told this in graduate school. I remember my professor saying to me, stop with the short stories and really try to write a novel, because that's what you can sell. So I would have these students who wanted to write a novel, but you cannot teach a novel in one semester. It's just impossible. And even in a year in the university setting, it's very difficult because the standard workshop has you workshopping each other's stuff, which is very time consuming and incredible and great in many ways, but it's not going to get you to type your own pages because you have to spend the night reading your classmates' pages. So it would have been ideal, for example, if I had taken you guys, the group of students I had at EKU, and then we had said, let's all do a novel. And I only meet with this class 6 times over the course of a year. So in the first class, we go around and everyone says, I've always wanted to write a novel, or this is the idea I have. And then we'll talk about the 3-act structure. And I say, by the next class, which is in about a month and a half or 2 months, you should have written 50 pages. And we don't read each other's pages. We don't workshop each other's pages. They come back in 2 months and we talk about how it's going. It's like, it's a support group, really. And I've been asked if I could make the class an online thing that people could buy, but it's really not as much lecture as just responding to the things people are dealing with. And now that I've been doing it for a while and writing and reading, it's sort of the one skill I have. I can hear somebody's idea and see the various ways it could be a novel. I can't see it for myself, but it's what I love thinking about. So then halfway through the year, I'll usually have a private coffee with the students, one at a time or online. I do have a few online students every year. And we sit down with index cards and write out all their scenes and do the 3-act structure and see how it's going. And there's always one or two students who drop out. And when I started teaching, I would sort of hound them and say, you know, please come back to class. But now I recognize for some people, they always thought they wanted to write a book, but they really don't. I mean, it's not for everyone. It's hard and, you know, solitary, as you said. But then by the end of the class, they will have finished a book if they stick with it and just meet the page counts. And it's so great because I had a principal who said, I pretended I was sick yesterday, you know, to finish the pages. And sometimes that's what you have to do, or go away for the weekend or whatever. And then I'll read each one and sort of make a plan for revision. And now I have a few book deals, some big book deals out of the class, which is pretty great. And I said to one of my students, one who has a great book coming out called The Hunting Wives, May Cobb, she was working on a memoir in the class, and then she handed in this incredible novel. And I said, how did you do this? And she said, well, I just did what you told me to do, which is very rewarding. But it's also just nice, you know, you're in the university environment, but for a lot of people who aren't, it's really wonderful even to spend 6 meetings with other writers talking about the work and being reminded that it's important and having someone hold you accountable. So it's very inspiring. I'm not teaching it right now because I have a lot going on, but I hope I will teach again. I love it.
That's great. And if folks are interested, I would encourage them to follow you on social media, check out your website, stay in contact with you, because it's a wonderful class for folks who, as you said, are thinking about writing a novel, want to talk about what they're working on. And then for some folks to even find out, maybe this isn't what I want to do, or maybe this isn't my best use of my mm-hmm. writing talents or abilities. Maybe I need to write poetry or screenplays or short stories or whatever. Mm-hmm. So great advice. Back to the Jet Setters. I wanted to ask you, about kind of, you know, all of the characters that we've talked about, all of the children suffer from, suffer from their father who was, you know, berating them on one hand and then ignoring them on the other. But one of the things I really found that was interesting, and I'm thinking back to your book and my big takeaways from it, and you talked about this briefly a moment ago, this idea that how you can have a bully in your life as a child. a verbally abusive bully, a physically abusive bully, an absent bully, a manipulative bully, or a combination of all four of those traits. But how that kind of leads to an adulthood of dishonesty, if that makes any sense, to where, you know, all of the children in Charlotte's family, all of her children, although she loves them very much and they all have admirable qualities that make us love them as characters, you know, there are moments throughout the story that we learn where they're not being honest with themselves, they're not being honest with their spouses, they're not being honest with Charlotte or each other. And I was wondering, is that a theme that you set out to kind of have developed or have a part of the novel, or is that something as you started to get to know your characters better, it just kind of came together in that way as you were trying to make them, you know, relatable to each other and related to each other, but different in their own right? How did that all come together? Because I think that's just such a powerful theme that permeates your entire story. And it's one I've thought about a lot since I finished the book is that. So can you talk about how kind of that emerged in the story?
You mean how the having a bully in your childhood affects you?
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, what's especially interesting to me is how it affects different family members in different ways. I think that it affects people profoundly. And I think that part of the journey to getting free of it is acknowledging that and saying this was really, really hard. And there's still a part of me that's being bullied. And sometimes it's this sort of, maybe you have a childhood self still inside you that's still scared of being bullied, that's still responding as if this abusive person is still in your life. I mean, there's a lot more research into childhood trauma, and it's fascinating research. And so in this case, all of the family members reacted differently, and they started relating in these strange ways. And all of them have sort of an overdeveloped sense of protection toward Charlotte. They feel that they're responsible for her and her emotions when really she's an adult and can be responsible for herself. So, you know, there's a lot they had to work through on this trip. And another thing that happens when you grow up in any childhood is that you grow apart from your family members, and you're really not forced to deal with this stuff because you can create your own family where it's not a factor, hopefully. Although for a lot of people, they choose a family that where it's, they just repeat the pattern. But so I wanted to stick them all back together to sort of see if they could forge a new way with each other's help. And so there are all these moments in the book, and this is another thing my editor asked for, where they're trying, where they're so close to asking for help or being honest with each other. I mean, there's a scene where Lee is about to tell Cord how lost she is. She's been telling her family that her acting career is going really well, that she's in Law and Order and all these exciting jobs, and yet her life is a complete disaster. And there's a moment where she almost says to Cord, "I'm lost, I'm scared." And she remembers when he used to protect her, and she just can't do it. She can't do it because that's not how she knows how to relate to him or anyone. And it really takes, you know, the kind of drastic end, toward the end of the book to make people see how damaged she is. We see as readers, but her own family doesn't see.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think that's the way that it often is. You sort of put on a front. You know, when you're a kid and there's problems in your family and you have to become an adult too early, it's hard to lay that down. It's hard to say, you know, I'm scared, I can't do this, I don't know how this should go, because you've just spent your whole life pretending that you do know to be safe.
Absolutely. So, absolutely true. And this next question, Amanda, I know is going to be like asking you who is your favorite child, but who is your favorite character? You have all of these wonderful characters and these wonderful rich connections and these backstories, and we learn about them so well, and we love them and we're frustrated by them at the same time. If you had to say one of them was your favorite, or maybe you had the most fun creating or writing about one character, who would it be?
Oh God. Well, the most fun was Giovanni. Cord's love Giovanni. He is just a hopeful guy from a happy, stable family who believes in himself and in love, and his mom is awesome. And I loved creating him, and because he's just sort of flummoxed by the whole thing. Like, I don't know what is wrong with Cord. And when it starts to really hurt him, he says, "I'm done. You know, I'm a healthy adult and I just need to move on." And so I loved writing him, and he's hilarious, trying to win over Charlotte in the golf cart tour of Rome. But the character I most identify with is Cord, because he is wrestling with so many things and from the outside seems to have it all together. But in fact, he does not have it all together. And I really, really relate to him. He's sort of me. I mean, he basically is me in a gay man's body on a cruise.
Well said. Well said. Very good. So, Amanda, in our final moments with you today, if anyone in our audience wants to get in contact with you to talk to you about your career, about writing, to find out more information about how to write a novel in a year, that course that you offer and that you teach, or how can they get in contact with you, first of all? And then more importantly, where can they get copies of The Jet Setters as well as the rest of your books?
Well, I have a website, amandaward.com, and you can contact me through there. It just says contact Amanda, and that's me. And I'm on social media, though I have to tell you, Elliot, I might get off for a little while. I've been going, you know, promoting a book is a lot of being pushy, and I'm kind of ready to just turn it all off in a month or so. We'll see. I don't know if you can as an author anymore, but it would be nice. Anyway, and then The Jet Setters and all of my books are at the library, are at all the bookstores on Kindle, Audible. Just look up Amanda Ward and you'll see them.
Amanda Ward has been our guest here today on this episode of Now Appalachia. We've been talking to her about her latest novel, The Jet Setters, a fantastic story about love and family, secrets and stress, and what happens when a group of children are bullied by an absent and now deceased father and sort of the legacy that that carries over. It's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful read. And if you're looking for something to add to your list, you really need to put this one on it and read it. She's also the author of several other novels, including The Same Sky, How to Be Lost, Close Your Eyes, Sleep Toward Heaven, and many others, and also the short story collection, Love Stories in This Town. So Amanda, congratulations on your new novel, The Jet Setters. It's a terrific read. And it was well worth all the effort that you put into it and all the rewrites that you were talking about, because it's a wonderful story. And I know that anybody that picks up a copy is really going to enjoy it. So congratulations. And as you keep writing and keep getting more things done, we'd love to have you back on Now Appalachia to talk about it. So thanks again.
I would be honored. Thank you, Elliot.
We also want to take a moment as we wrap up and finish up this episode of Now Appalachia to say a special thank you to the executive producer of Now Appalachia. Her name is Pam Stack. We appreciate all the work that she does behind the scenes, making all of these broadcasts and these podcasts of Now Appalachia possible. We also want to remind you that this is a copyrighted podcast owned and operated by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And so please keep that in mind. And until next time, this is Elliot Parker. Stay well and see you someplace soon, I hope.
You've been listening to Now Appalachia. This is a copyrighted podcast owned and operated by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Stay tuned. More outstanding podcasts are coming your way next. Stay tuned for more outstanding podcasts from the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.